And now, stay tuned for the most exciting, new, sexy radio show on the planet, the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show. I'm your host, Ronnie Deutsch. Now, I've got some very personal secrets to share with you today about my love affair with Las Vegas. Yep, it's going to be that kind of show today, because when I was the tax lady and owner of the largest business of its kind in the country for over two decades, I employed thousands of people and had 100,000 clients. So I was in Las Vegas a lot. In fact, when I launched the fourth fastest growing franchise concept in the country and lost my mind and my marbles, I had franchisees in Las Vegas. So naturally, I had a ton of business reasons to visit that great city, which is why I was in Vegas at least 2 to 3 times a year for about 25 years. Yep, do the math. I was in Vegas 25, 50, 75 times, and I loved every second of it. And I want to thank my brother Jay for getting me addicted to Las Vegas. In fact, truth be told, like many of you, I've had some of the most amazing and memorable experiences in Vegas that I am never, ever going to be able to forget. All right, maybe I should forget, but you get the picture. Now, I realize that my radio show is a PG-rated show, which means I'm not going to be telling you guys about all the hot, naked girls that I may have seen in Vegas, nor am I going to be telling you about the wild parties that I attended, because that's going to distract you, me, and my producer, Mike. So instead, what I want to do this morning is I want you to know that my heart feels broken for you, Las Vegas. And so my condolences go out to every person and family member that was affected by this senseless and cowardly tragedy. Let's face it, if it wasn't for the sheer bravery of the law enforcement officers, right, the first responders, and the thousands of good people who lent each other a hand, we would have thousands of people dead, because it was like shooting fish in a barrel. The second thing that I want to tell you is I love Las Vegas. I love the people. I love the Bellagio. I love Prime Restaurant. I love the Aria Hotel. I love every single thing about Las Vegas. Yep. That even includes the trips where my clock got cleaned out of the blackjack tables and the roulette tables and the craps tables. And even includes the trips where I had alcohol poisoning with my best friend, Evie, and my brother, Jay. And I spent hours, man, praying to the porcelain god in my bathroom while throwing up. You see, the truth about Las Vegas is pretty simple. Las Vegas, you are one of my top 10 places in my entire life. And I'm 53 years old, and I've seen the country. You see, my number one favorite destination in the entire world is Maui. That's obviously because I love to surf, and I have some unbelievable memories there with the love of my life. My next favorite destination is Santorini, Greece. Again, because of the sheer beauty and the people I got to be there with, including my mom. Obviously, that's followed by Portofino, Italy, because I rented a boat there, man, and I rode that boat on the Amalfi Coast. And then, of course, there's Venice, which in my opinion, the girl side of me believes it was so yummy romantic. Hey man, I also love Paris. I love London. I love Hyde Park. I love Sydney, Australia. But the thing is, I love you, Las Vegas, and I love you, New York, which is why this particular tragedy and 9/11 hit me so damn hard. I mean, let's face it. You either love Las Vegas like I do, or you don't get it. And I freaking love it. And I got to tell you something. You remember Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz? I believe that if she knew about Vegas, when she clicked her sexy red shoes, she would have asked to go there. So obviously, like many of you, I feel sick and devastated about that 64-year-old white male lone terrorist wolf, what he did. Because he's a coward, you see, and I can't stand cowards, and I can't stand bullies, and I despise rats. And today, I don't like you hackers, because you hacked my Facebook account and you took it over. Good luck to you, Facebook hacker in Turkey. Hope you enjoy being Ronnie Deutsch. Now, what makes this story surreal for me is that 1 week before this attack happened in Las Vegas at that country music festival, I was at the iHeart Music Festival, and there were 20 to 30,000 other people, and we were all sitting ducks for a madman to shoot. Now, obviously, all iHeart Music Festival's attendees in Vegas, you see, we had to go through that metal detector before we went in, and that made me feel safe. However, let's be real here. Do you think those metal detectors did anything for the people who are dead in Las Vegas? Because that lone wolf, you see, that dude shot them from 400 yards away on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay. You see, what else you need to know about me is unbelievable. Are you ready? I was on United Airlines Flight 93 from Newark, New Jersey to San Francisco on Tuesday, September 4th, 2001. Now, do you people understand what that means? It means that I was on that exact flight on the Tuesday before 9/11. You see, if those terrorists acted a week earlier, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Neither would my mom, my brother Rusty, or my sister Sue. So I want you to know something. I thank God for all of the additional bonus time that I have in my life. Now, when I'm in Vegas, you need to know something about me. I'm there to party. I'm not there to sleep. I'm there to smoke fat cigars, and I'm there to gamble. And I'm not going to lie to any of you. I've been to plenty of strip clubs, and I've seen plenty of yummy naked girls dancing around. Because let's face it, man, I like seeing girls dance, and I'm a pretty darn good dancer, unlike my brothers and my producer, Mike. I've got moves like Jagger. So in honor of Las Vegas, I want to share with you one of my favorite PG-13 stories that I've ever experienced, because I love you, Las Vegas. The year was 2003, and I was at the Bellagio Hotel playing roulette at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I got to tell you something. I had the roulette table all to myself. And of course, I'm betting my usual numbers, which are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I also bet 10, 12, and number 20. I was drinking vodka tonics with 2 limes. And I was, of course, smoking my favorite, most yummy Diamond Crown number 1 cigar. I'm telling you, for those of you who smoke cigars, I highly recommend it. Now, I got to tell you something. I was feeling a great buzz, and I was enjoying the Vegas life. Then all of a sudden, about 15 of the hottest-looking guys that I've ever seen, they walked up to my roulette table, and they started acting crazy and fun, like most people do when they're in Las Vegas. Now, I remember I was a little bit buzzed, and I didn't recognize who these people were until they started talking to me. And then it hit me, man. It hit me like a Mack truck. I was now playing roulette with a bunch of guys from the Florida Marlins baseball team. Yep, here I am. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm pretty buzzed. I'm smoking my cigars. And now I'm playing roulette with the Florida Marlins. The first thought I had is too bad none of my yummy hot friends were there to really enjoy it. Now, what makes this story so cool is that these same Florida Marlins, you see, they beat my Giants in 2003 to win the World Series. And believe me, I wasn't a fan in any way of the Florida Marlins in 2003. I mean, who was? But I got to tell you something. I was a fan of their catcher, who was none other than Pudge Rodriguez. Now, what these guys didn't realize about me is that I'm a baseball chick, so I could dish it out pretty good, and I loved it. And I especially loved playing roulette with you, Ozzie Guillen, and I loved it with you, Pudge Rodriguez, because here's what he and I did. We had a great exchange, and he told me at the table, Ronnie Deutsch, in his accent, of course, Roberto Clemente is the best baseball player in the world, in the history of our world, to which I respectfully disagreed and said, oh, no, 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 Barry Bonds is. He said, let's make a bet. He put $100 on number 21, I put $100 on number 25, and I swear to you on my life, number 21 hit. And that was a moment that I will never forget because he called me out and basically said, there you go, Ronnie Deutsch. How do you like me now? So the bottom line is simple. I love you, Las Vegas. I love the people and I love everything you represent. And I send my deepest condolences to everyone affected by this horrific tragedy. All right, everybody, I need you to stick around because I am bringing on Adrian Boysell, and his son was kidnapped on September 26th with an Amber Alert statewide. But the great news is his son was found, and we're going to talk about this story because it could happen to you and your children. All that is coming up next on the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
And now, back to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
Hello, and welcome back to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show. I'm your host, Ronnie Deutsch. And I got to tell you something. This segment is so personal to me. That is because I am interviewing our boy wonder genius, and his name is Adrian Boysell. And as many of you know, Adrian Boysell and Adrian Graphics, they built our website at RonnieDeutschRadio.com. These people are absolutely amazing. Well, I have to tell you what happened to Adrian's son. You see, on September 26th, Adrian's son was kidnapped by his non-custodian biological mother. Yeah, that's right. His non-custodian biological mother went to his school and took him out of school without permission. Adrian, I want to talk to you about this, and I want you to please tell us what happened and make sure and tell us the great news about your son.
Yeah, thank you, Ronnie. Glad to be here. I think my story is going to be able to help other people, so I think it's really important to share. I think it was a Tuesday of last week, I went to go pick him up from school, normal time, 3:05 from kindergarten, and as I walked up, the teacher gave me this crazy look on her face, and I knew something was wrong immediately, and I looked in the crowd of the kids to see Joseph, and he wasn't in there, and she said, he was already picked up. I said, what do you mean he was picked up? By who? And she said, I don't know. I mean, you don't know. Who picked him up? Some tall guy and a lady? And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, he was already picked up about 15 minutes before class was up. So I immediately called my girlfriend, asked him if she had picked him up. She said no, and I told her immediately, I'm calling 911. I ran up to the office, asked who had my son. They didn't know the name. I asked for the sign-out sheet. There's just a scribble across the paper, and the reason for checking him out said play. And I ended up calling 911 right there on the spot. Wasn't 100% sure who had taken him, but I had a really, really good idea and ended up finding out that it was his mom. Once the police showed up, they got surveillance footage of him, and they looked as shady could be. You know, he was wearing a hat over his face, sunglasses on inside, you know, looking down and just really, really shady. And without checking ID or any of those important precautions to put in place, they just let him walk out with her. And putting him into a criminal situation, basically.
Well, let's face it, Adrian, out here in Sacramento, after your son was kidnapped by his non-custodial biological mother and her boyfriend, an Amber Alert went out in Sacramento. It was everywhere, Adrian. So I want to know, how in the world did they find your son?
So I think they used social media. She doesn't have a cell phone, but her boyfriend did. So I think they used social media, Facebook. And then they sent detectives right away over to the house in Sacramento. They had his address already because of the license plate. He had a custom plate on in there. And so they sent the police out there, and they eventually showed back up at the house. And that's when they found out that Joseph was okay. And then they started the slow process of trying to get him back and basically verifying all the information that I'm his legal guardian and all that.
Now, for those of you just joining us, I am talking to Adrian Boysell. You see, Adrian Boysell's son was kidnapped on September 26th in Sacramento, California. But we have a happy ending with Adrian Boysell and his son. His son was found alive, whereas many children are found dead. Adrian, I want you to explain to us How did you feel during this entire experience when your son, the love of your life, for God's sakes, was missing?
Yeah, there's nothing in this world that I love more. And when I walked up to the office and found out who had taken him and the potential of what could happen and him being in another state or him just going off the grid and never seeing him again, my heart was in a million pieces. It was the worst day of my whole life to this day. There's nothing that's happened in my life that's been as bad as this situation. It was very traumatic for him, traumatic for me, and we're dealing with all that stuff now. So it's going to be a process over the next few months and counseling and therapy and all that stuff, but it's important that he knows that he's safe at the school and he hasn't been back there yet. So that's still something we're working through, trying to figure out if he's going to go back and if he does, when.
Now, as many of you know, I have talked about our failed criminal injustice system for the past 8 months. You see, I believe we have prosecutors who are corrupt. I believe we have judges that are unethical. And I believe our entire system needs to be flushed down the swamp, as does our president. Adrian, can you please tell me, are both of the people who kidnapped your son illegally on September 26, are they both in jail right now?
No, they are not. They were released less than 48 hours later on own recognizance. I believe he was bailed out and she was released on own recognizance less than 48 hours later.
How is it possible that in the city of Sacramento, our state's capital, you can kidnap a child and be out of jail within 48 hours on your own recognizance? Can you please explain to me, Adrian, because that makes me feel sick inside.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty serious offense. There's two felony counts, and they're both being booked on. And the fact that they were out a day and a half, 2 days later on those is just mind-blowing to me. It doesn't give me any confidence in our justice system, that's for sure. And I'm seeking legal representation for that in hopes that they actually get the punishment that they deserve for doing what they did, because they knew it was wrong. They were fully aware of the situation.
You see, Adrian, I slammed Equifax. I slammed them because I could not believe that they could be hacked and treat us so poorly thereafter. Yes. For me right now, my producer, Mike, and I, we're white as a ghost. I do not understand how the school that you had your son at would allow a stranger to sign out your son and kidnap him. Can you explain to me what you thought the protocols and the procedures were at his school?
Yeah, I'm the one who enrolled him, put him on the waiting list, did the whole process completely alone and by myself. She wasn't listed on any paperwork anywhere. I was called into the office 4 days after he started school and told of the situation to the assistant principal of what had happened with his mom and the situation going on, and knew that she wasn't supposed to be in contact with him. I had three people on the checkout list to be able to pick him up. They weren't on that list. And so they let him be released to someone that wasn't on his list. And they made an excuse that there was no flags in the system. So that's kind of where it's at, is they need to change their policies and their procedures and the way they check out these kids and make sure that they're going to the right people and checking their IDs, making sure there isn't a domestic violence restraining order or they're a sex offender or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why a parent shouldn't be around a kid if they've done criminal acts to their child.
Well, Adrian, she was a non-custodial parent, for God's sakes. So you have got to tell our listeners, moms, dads, aunties, uncles, grandparents, what do we need to know, Adrian? What is it that we don't know that you can help a parent listening to you right now?
Just make sure you over-communicate with the school and letting them know the situation about, you know, having a certain person on the list that's a flag that shouldn't be there if they want flags, but also just making sure that they're checking IDs and asking for the information, and that you're just staying in close communication with the school when people are picking them up. And that's pretty much what I did the whole time, but still these situations and accidents happen. So it's just unfortunate for Joseph.
The bottom line, Adrian Boysell, I love you and I love your son.
Right.
And I am so grateful that on today's show, we get to celebrate that your son was found safely and that you get to live happily ever after with your son. Because let's face it, there are tens of thousands of children not as lucky as your son. They are kidnapped by their non-custodian parent and they are taken out of the country and some parents never see them again. All right, everybody, you know who I am. I'm Ronnie Deutsch. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to stick around because I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you what you don't know about your life and your business and your money. All that is coming up next on the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
And now, back to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
Hello, good morning, and welcome back to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show. I'm your host, Ronnie Deutsch, and I got to tell you something. If you are listening to me right now, you may want to roll your window down and scream, "Thank you, Jesus." That's because in this segment, I have got my unbelievable mentor and life coach in studio with me. And you know what we're talking about? We're talking about you and what it is that you don't know. Because I got to tell you a secret about me. You see, I own the largest business of its kind in the country with thousands of employees and 100,000 clients. And I had a perfect record with the State Bar of California. No disciplinary action. And I was never sued for malpractice. And I spent about $1 million a year on all of my lawyers to make sure my law firm was regulatory compliant. Well, guess what I didn't know? I didn't know that you, Jerry Brown, would file a lawsuit against me with guns a-blazing. That is why, Brandon Hines, we have got to talk about what people and business owners don't know. So welcome, Brandon, and good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
All right, Brandon, give it to me good. What is it that people and business owners don't know?
Well, the first thing I do with any business that I'm pursuing, whether it's operating or I'm about to open it, I look at the good, bad, and ugly. I want to know what it's going to look like when it's good. What if it went bad? And what about the ugly partnerships that could turn out? Just like every marriage in California, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the end. So they have these things called prenups. So the first thing I advise any partnership group I go into, if I'm working with them and I'm supposed to be their mentor, my first thing is to do is to mentor them, correct? So I'm going to say, where is the buy-sell agreement? What if something happens tomorrow? What if this happens? What if this person passes away? How does this play out to your company? So buy-sell agreements are huge. They're very important. And you can't just push them off because there might be one day where you show up and nobody gets along anymore. Or one of the partners decides to go elsewhere and you're left standing there holding the bag doing the business and he's still getting paid for it. So paperwork's important. Your buy-sell agreements, how you're actually positioning your company. Do you have an exit strategy? What if 2 years down the road you don't want to operate anymore? So just looking at all those first starting points, that's the first thing I look at in the structure of the corporation or the LLC, however they're set up, is how are they structured and is it done correctly?
You see, you bring up a great point about business entities and, of course, about structure, because what most people don't know is there is a very big difference between you in a partnership versus you in a limited liability company versus you in an S-Corp. Now, Brandon, you are very successful. You are growing and you are badass. What about employees? Can you give us from your experience advice on what we don't know about employees?
Well, one of the things that I teach in my course, Design It, is to find out everything you know, like inspect what you expect from every employee. Literally stop by and spend a moment seeing how they're doing the job that you've tasked them. Look at that and say, okay, what's going on in this position? Am I inspecting what I'm expecting from this employee? So inspect what you expect from them. Stop by, ask how they're doing, what you can help with, and see if they're actually hitting the goals that you need firsthand, not just looking at a report, not going back and having a one-on-one with them, which is great. I always encourage those, but inspect what you expect. And one of the first things I'll implement into a group, if there's people who work in the staff for you, is training the trainer. So simply put that in the explanation for you is, let's say there's three of us. The first day, I train both of you. The next day, one of you trains both of us. And the third day, the third one trains both of us. So now all three of us have seen the same exact way to do the thing that we do every day. You've seen it from the owner perspective. You've seen it from the register's perspective. You've seen it from the back room's perspective. All three of those employees were trained the same way, and they paid attention because they know, tomorrow I'm teaching this.
You see, that shocks me, Brandon, because when I employed thousands of people, I had the most amazing supervisors and supervisors above them and managers involved. And yet, when you talk about accountability, we tend to not hold people accountable at times, Brandon. Why is that? Why is it that we as individuals and even business owners, we sometimes fail to hold people accountable?
Faith. Trust. Which is great. I have faith in all my employees, and sometimes I have too much faith. I see the good side of them, and I want them to be there, and sometimes they're just not. And without help, they won't be. sometimes you can get an employee that you want to go to 100%, and then you finally just realize they're an 80% employee and you're totally happy with that and they're doing a great job. They're doing the best they can. Human to human, we related that. And we know that's how it works.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the human to human. Brandon, I've talked with you about this before. What don't people know? Why is it, Brandon, that sometimes women, I have so many yummy friends, and what they tell me is this: Ronnie, I'm dating this guy, but I kind of don't like this. Or I'm dating that dude, and I kind of don't like this. Why is it, Brandon, that these women, these amazing women, settle? Is it just what don't they know about the guy, or is it what they don't know about themselves?
Wow. That's a deep one. So for me, I had this thing that I've learned from mentorships and working with other mentors, is that you ask for something, you be okay with what you get, and you ask for more, right? So you may go on a date and you find this guy has a lot of attributes, or this woman has a lot of good positive qualities, and you accept for what it is and hope that they'll grow into more. Like, you always hear there's these girls who like to fix things and there's guys that want to fix girls. Well, you can't do that. You have to either want to grow with them or you don't. And the same thing happens with your employees. You may want to fix somebody, but you might have to look at it and say, is my time worth the time I'm going to put into trying to fix this? Is my heart going to break during this relationship trying to get them to the level I need them at? Or should I just scrap it now and go find a new one?
Why is it, Brandon? I'm so grateful you brought this up. It seems like people want to always change their partner versus finding someone they fit with and living happily ever after. Is that just an epidemic of Americans, that we just want to change the people we're with?
So I say this a lot, and I think by this time, as a mentor, you guys know I look to mentors. During one of my mentorship courses that I take for me in neuroscience, a statement was made: in order for me to grow, I have to be okay with where you are. And as fast as I can be okay with that, so let's say I have a partner, and that's their job. They're never going to excel in it. There's no ceiling to bust through. That's their income. That's their life. They're going to retire there. The faster I'm okay with that, the faster I can grow myself. So let's take it, for example, a construction worker who's got a limited line of business that he can only do, say, $2 million a year. And the wife wants to make $4 million. So she goes out and becomes a real estate agent. And she can just blow through the roof, right? There's no cap on it. But this construction worker is labored by the time of staff he has and what he can do. So as fast as that real estate agent's okay with her husband, who's a successful contractor, the faster she'll grow. But if every day she's going, oh, I need him to make more money. No. In order for me to grow, I have to be okay with where you are. So this is kind of a lot of the questions that come in through AskBrandonNow.com, is how do I grow when I'm being held back? You're not being held back. Learn to move forward and be okay with where everyone else is at.
I am so grateful for Brandon's presence in my life. He is my mentor. And when I see him, he moves me. Let me tell you what we got coming up next. I am going to talk to you about this odd epidemic in the United States where female teachers somehow think it's okay to have sex with their underage students. Absolutely disgusting. That discussion is coming up next on the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
Hey, surf is definitely up on the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show.
Hello, good morning, and welcome back to the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show. I'm your host, Ronnie Deutsch, and I got to tell you something. The surf right now in Malibu is about 2 to 4 feet, which is very, very inviting. All right, before we get started, I want to remind you to visit RonnieDeutschRadio.com if you'd like to listen to any of our previous radio shows or check out our outstanding experts. All right, in this next segment, we're going to talk about a very disturbing epidemic and trend that involves our most trusted professionals, and that's our educators, right? Our female teachers who are teaching kids ages 12 to 18 years old. Now, you see, over the past 8 months, I've talked so much to you about kids. However, what's really shocking to me today and why I need to talk with you is the number of female teachers who are being arrested for having sex romps with their underage students. And these kids are anywhere from like 12 to 17 years old. Yes, you heard me correctly this morning. Hundreds of female teachers from all across the country. They've been arrested, man, because they're having sex in their cars, in their houses, in their classrooms, and in their apartments with underage students. Now, before I share my opinion about this sick and deeply disturbing epidemic, I want to remind all of you about a classic movie called The Graduate. Now, as you recall, in that movie, Dustin Hoffman, he was like having a full-on torrid, hot love affair with an older woman whose name happened to be Mrs. Robinson. And Mrs. Robinson was played beautifully by Anne Bancroft. Man, she was hot back then. So the notion about older women having sexual affairs with younger men, man, it's well documented on TV and in the movies. And all you got to do today is look at Madonna. Madonna, I like you. You like young, hot, yummy men, but all of them are over the age of 18. And if you listen to the lyrics, you know, of that song, Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel, you're going to realize that they're thanking Jesus for women like Mrs. Robinson. So what does that tell you this morning? I mean, the album, it won a Grammy for Album of the Year. So I assure you, the vast majority of people listening, you know what they like? They like the notion of men having sex with older, hot women. You see, the thing about that movie, though, is that Dustin Hoffman, he was a college graduate. So he was a consenting adult who was having hot and sexy love affair with the mom, Mrs. Robinson. He wasn't a 13-year-old student in The Graduate. He wasn't 13 and having sex with his biology teacher. Nor was Dustin Hoffman 15 years old having sex with his math teacher. Because I have to tell you what that is called. You see, we live in the greatest state in the country, even though we have the worst governor in the country. We live in California. And in California, it is called statutory rape if you have sex with a child who is under 18 because they can't consent. Now, what freaks me out a bit about this topic is the perception. You see, I was just talking to my buddy about this, and I believe and she believes that the perception is wrong. Because let's face it, you know what most people have told me? Hey, Ronnie, these young boys enjoy having sex with their hot older teachers. And let's face it, Ronnie, these boys could say no, but instead, these boys are having sex with these teachers and they're bragging about it with their friends, which is how we're finding out about it. You see, that's the difference between girls getting molested by men. Because when girls are molested by older men, I assure you, they don't enjoy it. I mean, if we were really being honest about this subject and I talked to my producer, Mike, about it, we both believe that there are millions of underage teenage boys who would love nothing more than to go to their first period class and have sex with their teacher. Because guys, that's what happens when you go through puberty. So my question for you this morning is pretty damn simple. Why are so many female teachers having sex with their underage students? Because when I grew up at 17146 Goya Street in Granada Hills, California, I don't remember any female teachers ever getting arrested for having sex with my underage baseball friends like Paul Oates or Jeff Weatherby or Danny Scarshog, one of my favorite boyfriends. Do you understand what I'm telling you? I think that some of these teachers are actually hallucinating and delusional, and they've smoked too much weed, they take too much alcohol, and they're overdosing on those prescription pills. You know why? Because they actually believe they're in love with these underage kids. In fact, let's talk about that most famous case, right? You remember her, that teacher, her name was like Mary Letourneau, right? She was thrown in jail, man, because she had a love affair with that 13-year-old kid. But what's so trippy about Mary is that she actually married this kid that she was having sex with, and she had a kid with him. So again, she thought she was in love with him. They ultimately got married. Kind of trippy. We know they're divorced today. All right. Why are some other reasons why female teachers are having sex? I'm going to tell you why. they're lonely. All right? In fact, I bet some of these teachers are even feeling depressed and even desperate. But are you kidding me? You're so lonely that you're going to have sex with a 12-year-old kid? You are sickening, and you need to be in jail for a lot longer than a year. All right, let's talk about the other reasons. Hey, man, I like to call it lust. Now, let's face it. When you have a connection with someone, the chemistry and the energy, man, it is freaking insane. Believe me, I have been around people that I have chemistry with, and when you got it, you got it. But here's the problem. You see, these teachers who are lusting after these kids because they feel some sort of a chemical attraction, they don't have any boundaries, man. They don't know where to draw the line because lust has them totally and completely off tilt. And then obviously, many of these female teachers, they're screwed up. Many of them have been sexually abused as children, so they're not emotionally healthy. Now, what really concerns me this morning is the perception of this crime. Because male teachers, right, I believe their motives are different. You are sick mofos. You are predators of children. You have sexual desires and you want to feel powerful and you want to dominate. All right, maybe you're going through a midlife crisis. But look at that dude who kidnapped that girl and went all across the country. You are a sick man and you deserve to be in jail, where I hope you get what you deserve every single day of your life. Now let's talk about women. I've got a lot of amazing, yummy female friends. And you know what they tell me? Ronnie, I want to take care of my man. I'm that kind of woman. I want to provide and I want to take care of him. I like you. But here's the thing. How can you as a woman want to take care of a kid? The kid is 12 years old. He's 13. He's 15. You are a pedophile when you have sex with an underage child. Don't try to justify it and call it something else like you want to help a kid. Because we all know what's going on here. These kids don't have the capacity to love you, teachers, like you need to be loved. But you know what they do have the capacity to do? They've got the testosterone, so they're able to provide you with sex. Now, none of these are valid reasons for any female teacher or any adult to ever have sex with an underage kid. And this is especially true for you teachers, because you are told and you are trained to never, ever, ever touch a kid. Now listen, my last point is obvious. I want all of us to change our perception. I want the women who commit these crimes to go to jail for as long as men. I don't want these women to just have their licenses lost because if you, female teacher, ever tried to touch my nephew or my great nephew, oh man, it would be ugly for you. All right, everybody. Bottom line here is that illegal sex acts with minors are still illegal in California. Here's the bottom line. I want to thank you for listening to my show. I want you to go out there and have an unbelievable weekend. And I want to thank you for your support, your emails, and your phone calls. Bottom line is, I love our radio show and hope you do too. All right, everyone, have a great weekend. Look forward to seeing you next week on the Ronnie Deutsch Radio Show. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson.